Accession number 9422, Reel 3.
Mr. Harold Hayward, Reel 3. You were telling me about the relationship between officers and the other ranks, and you were just developing a point when the tape ran out. Could you continue, please?
Yes. Most of the officers, particularly the junior officers, had been in the battalion ranks themselves and had been granted commissions. I remember Eric Robinson. That's the printing firm. He went to his company officer and said that he wished to apply for a commission, and this old strict regular major said, "Commissions are not for the like of you. You've got to have a private income, my boy." He said, "Would 400 a year be enough?" He said, "What school do you go to?" "Marlborough." So so some of them had to learn about the type of ordinary soldier, quite different from what they'd been used to between the wars or the Boer War.
Did they have any trouble in that, some of them, adjusting some of their attitudes? Did they have any trouble adjusting their attitudes?
Not at all. Not even, which I think could have caused trouble, in one of your own section eventually becoming your own platoon commander. A thing, of course, which couldn't have happened in the old pre-war army.
Now, earlier you mentioned that you tended to know people in your own company, but not much outside.
That is
so. Could you explain that?
Well, except that that was our big family, and you knew everybody in your own company. And of course, in those days, because there was such a crush to get into Bristol's Own, we were up to complement of 250 per company, 1,000 per battalion, which was the maximum, and we kept to the maximum because people still wanted to come in if folk were found they couldn't stand soldiering, either through the physical or because they'd taken commissions and gone elsewhere. There was still a queue waiting to get into Bristol's Own.
So, but the company was what you identified with most, not the
indeed,
battalion.
Yes, that's right.
What were your own company officers like? Can you remember anything about them?
Yes, I remember that our first officer, Major Lightman, he'd been in the Boer War, but I think only as a private, but at least he'd seen warfare, and he was a very smart chap. My own company commander, Major Lee Warner, was a squire in one part of the country, and although we weren't in any way on normal speaking terms to him, as he would be in the mess, perhaps to a junior subaltern, to an ordinary private, wouldn't arise. But I know that when I was went on a crime sheet for the first time in cutting the bottom of my overcoat down, which was clogged with mud, some mud and frozen, and cutting my leg. That was a crime, damage army clothing. I was brought in front of him, a thing I'd never thought would ever happen, but he treated me in a sense as a naughty boy. Don't do it again. It didn't punish me.
Did you ever think of applying for either a commission or for an NCO rank?
Yes, I did that. It was suggested to me by I told you that two of the masters of the school were privates and became officers, one in the regiment and another one in another regiment, another battalion. And after I was wounded the first time, it was put to me that had I thought to take a commission.
How about earlier than that, though? I mean, while you were still training, did you ever think then?
I was amongst friends, and we didn't want to part. And that was the attitude of quite a quarter of the people who wanted to stay amongst their friends in one section could have had the capacity to be a junior officer.
Now, you mentioned you could go out on an evening on an early or late pass. What sort of thing, and you also mentioned you went home quite a lot, what other sorts of recreation would you have when you went out of the camp? What would people do, or you do?
Yes, well, if we belong to any associations at all in Civvy Street, we'd probably go and keep on with them. But I like to go home and sit amongst the family, as it happens, and then get 10 o'clock, by 10 o'clock I'd have supper with them, then get back to the battalion before 12.
Is that what a lot of the men would do?
Indeed they did, particularly the married men who wanted to be with their wives.
Did many go out to go to the cinema or to the pubs?
Yes,
or?
Well, there weren't many cinemas in those days. Hardly any cinema, but they'd go to a theatre and they'd go to their favourite pub. Senior chaps like 30 years old or 25, they'd go and be amongst their friends. Of course, who regarded it something as heroes, not just being a soldier and in khaki, but being in Bristol's own. It was something.
What about inside the camp? What sort of recreation did you have there? Any sport?
Yes, but we didn't have, say, platoon cricket 11s or soccer sides at all. None whatsoever. Nothing lower than the battalion. The battalion had a very good reputation. It beat every other battalion in Kitchener's Army at rugby, and I'm pleased to say that four or five of the 15 were all boys of the same of the school I went to, and one of them, whom I knew because he lived in the suburb I lived in, he said, why don't you come and join the rugby club, join up, because I'd been in the first 15 then and I got my cap, but of course I was only a boy really, 18, when these were fellows, you know, 22, played in club rugby.
So you didn't get on too well in the rugby, or did you try?
Well, I knew I wasn't up to wasn't up to it. I was too young a person to play the sort of rugby which was first class rugby, which the rugby clubs throughout the country were playing.
Did you play any? Did you do any sports at all for recreation yourself?
No, not at all. No, I didn't do any. I didn't need it because I had plenty of athleticism, both in the gymnasium and also in field operations and route marches.
What about sports day? Did they have a sports day?
Yes, we had a sports day, and then you learnt that you didn't know that the man in front of you on parade, he'd got a 3A title, but you hadn't heard of that before. When he could run 100 yards, you know, in 10.5 seconds.
What would you do for recreation then, while you were in the camp?
Nothing at all. Nothing other than the drill, which was we were kept hard at drill, and we out in the morning, out in the afternoon. You didn't want much else.
But I mean, what would happen when you didn't have a pass out? What would you do in the evening?
I can't think what did. I must have gone home every time. It was so convenient.
Now, towards how long were you at Ashton Gate Camp?
Until Midsummer Day 1915. I remember that because we were, prior to going there, that we had two small went into billets twice. Our company, the only one that went twice, to a small country town called Chipping Sodbury. And we did drills around there. It was a change. We were in billets, in digs, and then we did our field training on a wider scale. No no barrack square drill then, all open field practice.
And this open field practice was the same sort you've already described, was it? With you know, companies and with people.
Again, we were only one company went out by itself, so we did it within the operations of a company, under a company commander.
What sort of thing was it then? Could you describe?
Well, yes. Again, it was open air warfare. You know how to take cover, and judging distance, and obeying commands in the open, passing of messages was a great thing.
What were you trained in that?
Yeah, well, to get absolutely perfect. The one which was told to us, that it's supposed to have happened in the Boer War, and the message was passed back by word of mouth. We are going to advance. Send us reinforcements. By the time we go back to the colonel, we are going to a dance. Can you lend us 3 and 4 pence?
And you were trained in accurately passing the messages.
Yes, to know that the message got back correctly. That was a great thing.
What were your billets like at Chipping Sodbury?
Well, they were houses where we were put in up and billeted on the people's houses, made sort of semi-heroes, you know, because Bristol's own, even though Chipping Sodbury was 15 miles away, the fame of Bristol's own, people were trying to come in from the country to join up with Bristol's own, rather than in the particular territorial regiment which might have covered that part of the shire.
What can you remember about your billets at Chipping Sodbury?
Well, there again, there were 3 of us. The same 3 as I've told you about. Eventually, I was best man to one of them, and that's why I'm here, because he came to live in Cushalton, and the other one I was at school with. So we all lived in the same suburb, so knew each, and my parents knew one another, and we were there, and we had meals. With the family, or certainly in the family. We didn't have them in a hall and just slept in houses. We actually fed in the place where we were billeted.
How did they treat you, besides being a hero? Were you well treated?
Yes. People were pleased to have someone billeted on them. It was quite an adjunct to the prices were rising, and it was quite an adjunct to the housewife to have this extra billet money, you know, to help with the family purse.
Besides this, before you left on Midsummer's Day, did you have any large parades, or were you ever reviewed by anyone famous or important? Anything you remember in that line?
No, the on occasion, generally past mayors of the city, they formed a committee, and they used to come, and we used to have a parade, and the colonel used to parade the battalion just to show what these civilians could do in parade drill, you know, from the start, that these are reputable citizens, people who held high position in the city, or had held, you know, had concerned themselves with the formation.
But there were no major parades that you remember?
No, there was none. None other than the battalion, no. We weren't linked to any other unit till we went up to Wensleydale, when we were brigaded with 3 city battalions of Birmingham.
Just to pick on a point, can you remember any special Christmas celebrations in 1914?
I remember I was on sentry duty for one of the days on it, we had to stop people. A lot of people got leave, and you got a free railway pass. I didn't have mine till January, when I visited some my father's cousins for the first time, whom I knew but never seen. But I had a free pass, railway pass, to go and see them. That, of course, we had to be careful. No one broke in to the barracks over the fences.
Did people ever try to do that? Because you've mentioned that a few times.
Yes, well, it was known that some youngsters tried to climb. It was a fence place because it was White City, where you had to pay to go in to the White City. So there was the boundary fence over which some people did on occasion try to climb over and see what they could see or take.
Were they ever caught, or would they get away with it?
No, well, once or twice I know they were caught. Of course, but they also knew that we had sentries posted all around the outskirts of this big fence, and they saw we had rifles and we had bayonets fixed, they didn't know whether if they were caught they wouldn't be bayoneted or something like or shot.
Right, to go to the point you mentioned, Midsummer's Day 1915, when you were sent to Yorkshire. Midsummer's Day, sorry. Can you remember about leaving Bristol? Was there a big farewell?
Oh, yes, the town turned out to see us march to the main Bristol station and cheered us all the way.
Can you describe the scene for us? So that
The company officers were all mounted, the band was playing in front, and we had our best suits on and all burnished up, and we carried rifles at the slope but bayonets fixed, and we did march between a line of people from Ashton Gate, where we were, had to go through the city out the other side to Temple Mead station, where we entrained for Wensleydale, Yorkshire.
Did they run out into the ranks or into the soldiers, the public, or were they?
We would. That's one thing that no matter how anyone might say, there's my Bobby, and run to give him a, no break in ranks. The soldier would have frowned very much on whether it was his fiancée, his wife, or his mother who might have wanted to do that, thinking, my boy's going away to war, you know. Actually, we weren't. We were merely going away to further advanced training.
Did your family turn out to cheer you up?
Yes. My father and were at a point to see us going by, all waving flags and what have you. We were marching to attention, that's to say, rifles up the slope and bayonets fixed.
So, where did you went to Wensleydale? Was that a train journey all the way?
Yes, a train journey all the way. Yes, it was a place where the local landowner was told he was going to have a brigade put on his whole Wensleydale. He said, "Oh no, he wasn't," and so they sent him a division. Just to show, things had changed so much, because they were minor monarchs, you know, in these valleys or particular parts of the country. But of course, for the first time, they were no longer Lord of all surveyed. There was some higher authority, to wit, the War Office, who could just do what it liked and not what they liked.
What was your brigade?
Ninety-fifth.
And what was your division?
I think the 66th Kitchener Division. We were eventually made up on Wensleydale, not only into brigades where we were in one valley, but the other three brigades of the Kitchener Division were in other valleys. So there could be divisional training for the staff officers of the division.
What accommodation were you provided with in
tents,
this valley?
Under canvas.
What was that like? Can you describe the tent? And
well,
how
many of us, those who had been in scouts, for instance, knew what had been intended. But of course, I think the one that I the two things I remember most was having to turn an enamel plate over to have your second course, and not another plate put in front of you, which we did at Ashland Gate. We had a plate for the first meat course, then a plate for the second course. But we wondered what to do. Wasn't there any plates coming up when say rice pudding was being dished out, and we had to learn to turn the plate over. And of course the lavatory accommodation wasn't secluded as it was in our own homes.
What are the sanitary arrangements were there? What were the latrines like?
There was a squad called the sanitary squad, and they dug deep pits about 6 feet deep and about 3 feet wide and about 10 yards long, and there was a pole put across on two stays, and you sat on that. Took me a long time before I could bring myself. There we are.
You were embarrassed, were you?
Embarrassed, yes. One got over it. Human nature forced you to get over your embarrassment.
The tents were, how many were there to a tent? About?
I think 10. Let's say 10, yes. Good size bell tents.
What was your bedding like? Did you have the
mattresses? Mattresses, yes.
But no bed?
No bed, no, just mattress on the floor. As you would if you were going your own personal camping.
And you were quite used to this. You didn't mind going outdoors. It didn't make you uncomfortable.
What didn't?
The situation, be it camping and the tenting. You were accustomed to this.
No,
right?
Well, although I hadn't been a Boy Scout because I'd gone to a boarding school where they didn't have scouts, which had just started as I was about to go to the Colson School, 1909, when Baden-Powell first started it. And I did a little bit before I went to the Colson School, but not to get into real scout practice. But but being at school, I mean, you slept in a dormitory. You didn't just have your a room to yourself and your brother or something. So new to that.
So what was the training? What differences were there in the training when you got to Wensleydale?
Well, we had bigger. This was training perhaps as much for the brigade staff as for the battalion staff. After all, the battalions had to learn to, first of all, the platoon staff had to learn to act under the commands of the company commander. The company commander at Ashland Gate had to take his part in a battle where the whole battalion was engaged, and the colonel and the adjutant and the headquarters staff came into actual operation, field operation, which they couldn't do just when it was a platoon going out. And then of course the same thing applied doubtless to when we were brigaded, the brigade staff, the brigadier and his brigade major and staff captain all had to put into actual practice that which they, which possibly the those who hadn't been in it before had never had any practical experience.
And what did this involve at your level? How did their practicing affect you? What sort of things would you have to do?
Yes, well, we operated over a wider range. I mean, we were, perhaps our battalion was told to take drive in from the flank and yet keep touch with the next battalion. So by that the commanding officers of each battalion within the brigade got to know it, and so did their order room staff got to know each other. And so when they were telephoning up, they knew whom they were speaking to. They could talk like that.
What else can you remember about the training at Wensleydale?
Well, it was in the Peak District, and of course it was, I won't say up, halfway up some of the peaks, but much of it was tougher ground over which we had to operate, and we did night operations there.
What do you remember of night operations?
Well, we probably parade at say 8 o'clock, and then we would say advance on a town. Perhaps the whole brigade would advance on a town, and as though we had someone defending that town. Also, a couple of miles our side of the town. That's the sort of thing that you'd meet with, we thought, in actual warfare. And the thing was to drive the outlying defenders in something like Falkland Islands. You say, oh, Falkland Islands were like this. Had to drive the people back bit by bit till eventually they drove them into the town, and which was or was not captured.
Did these operations go smoothly, or did you have trouble keeping cohesion at
Well,
night?
It was novel. You see, we were all so young, so we were all newly enlisted soldiers by themselves. It isn't like the 1st Battalion of a regiment. There was people, there was a range of service, probably from 15 years to 15 months to doing these things. But we were all rookies together, if you can understand. But it was exciting, really, doing night operations, working through the night. You had to take a chance whether it poured with rain, as you would if you'd been out in France, or, I say, in the Boer War.
Were there any other aspects of new training that you remember from Wensleydale?
No, because we went on there to fire our general musketry course, which wasn't now. You were asking me about that, and that was in October, November 1915. October 15. We went on from Wensleydale to the coast near Sunderland to fire our general musketry course.
What can you remember about your musketry course then?
Well, it was laid down butts, and you fired at 50, and then 100, and then 200, and then 300 yards.
Were you given training at the same time, or was it just purely firing?
No, we were just engaged on just doing that then, because there weren't many musketry courses on butts, so they were in very great demand. You just fired what was required in the to turn you out as a soldier, firing, as I say, at 50, 100, 200, 300 yards to see what the enemy looked like at those distances. And you had a target for every distance, and to see how well or how poorly you did, because many who were good soldiers, when it came to firing, they were no good at all, so they didn't come out with us.
How did you do in this?
Medium. I didn't get across guns on my arm, but one of these friends I told you did. He became where's it come from me? But anyway,
a sniper.
No, he did become a sniper. But
a marksman. Tell him
what. Yes, a marksman. Yes.
So you were just firing at these butts the once. You only did it once, did you?
Just went through the course, yes. If you made a mess of things during those five different positions or ranges of firing, well, you didn't get another chance.
How long did it take, the course?
The battalion was there a fortnight, and in that fortnight, four companies, and you did it, I think, half a company at a time. Four companies did what I've just told you. Each man, and of course, cooks, and signalers, and cooks.